back, everyone. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 45 of the Art Scene Podcast. After a few months off for the holidays and the new year, I'm back at it again with a brand new guest, and if you haven't noticed already, a brand new intro song, courtesy of Obed Padilla, an up-and-coming musical artist out of my hometown of Oceanside, California. So shout out to Obed, and be sure to check out his SoundCloud. My guest today is Jamil Elou, a visual artist based here in the Bay Area whose work deals with issues of identity relating to race, queer, sexuality, and gender. We discuss his path to being an artist and the growth of his art practice and his current show at SF Camera Work titled Together, which runs through March 14th. And now, here's our conversation. Well, thanks, Jamil, for coming on. And I've been looking forward to this because I've been seeing your work all over the Bay Area and different shows that I visited. Ban 8 was one that happened last year. And I believe it was called Tallest Part of the Arch over at the Southern Exposure show. Yes. And it was not the same work, right? It didn't go from Ban 8 to that. It's like different subjects.
It's part of the same project that I've been working on for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's called Heels. And essentially it's collaborations with me and people in the Bay Area that are part of the work, and it's a growing. So it's even the show now, SF Camera Work.
Yeah.
There's a continuation of that project.
So before we get into like about your work, I wanted to first start out with like where you're from, and you know, did you start out? You mentioned earlier you're from Brazil. But how did you, you know, did you always live in Brazil, or like, did you, you know, how young were you there before you moved, here to the Bay Area?
First foremost, thank you for having me. Thank you for being here. Thank you for, you know, for putting this together. I really appreciate the invitation. I was born in Brazil in a multicultural family. My mother's from Paraguay. My dad is Syrian. So my first exposure to art making or ideas of art has to do with theater. Mm-hmm. When I was about 13 to 14 years old, I was part of a theater group early years of high school. And I met a person who became one of my best friends at the time, whose dream was to be a filmmaker. He had a path in his journey to be a filmmaker. And it was a really inspiring to me to learn about film through him. Mm-hmm. So, and by learning about filmmaking, for him it was about directing and making films. And for me, it really became about the image. Mm. Think about how images were constructed for the film, for the narrative of the film. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of my beginning of the conversation of photography. As I grew up in Latin America, it's so hard to realize or to think about you can be an artist one day, because the role models are so limited in that conversation. So I never really felt that I could have an identity as an artist, or that I could even pursue photography. But the idea of expressing myself through taking photographs or writing or being a theater was always very much part of my existence, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to the United States when I was 19 years old. And immediately, because of the challenge of language barriers, photography or the camera became a way of expressing myself and felt a safe way to express myself as well. Because I didn't have to speak.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? It's interesting because my vocabulary in English was so limited. Mm. And by using a camera, activated something that was very important as self-expression.
Mm. Right? Right.
And that's sort of the journey that really manifested, in a sense, the my initial career in taking photographs. I went to a community college called Cabrillo College by Santa Cruz, is in Aptos.
And so real quick, so when you left Brazil, curious, what made you specifically come to that area, to the Santa Cruz
so
area?
So it's a long, long story. And I came, me and my sister, we went to Florida first.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So, and two other friends. So there were the four of us in Florida. And for anyone who listened to this, nothing against Florida, but Florida was not for me.
Yeah.
It was a very different culture. I had a very, very strong cultural shock.
Yeah.
So I was on a moment of returning to Brazil, and I had a friend in Florida who had siblings living in California. And on a dinner with them, with this couple, who is very much part of my life, their family to me now, they suggested that instead of returning to Brazil, how about try to go to California to try it out to see what it's like.
Sure.
Right? I was studying law in Brazil.
Wow.
So, So I finished high school and I went to law school. And the lack of identification with that universe was really huge. I didn't connect. The idea of going to law was this, you know, pressure maybe from family or with this idea that you have to law or being a doctor.
Right,
you know,
like the safe career.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, this is prior to the idea that potentially I could ever be an artist or a photographer. Yeah. So
was anybody in your family a lawyer before?
So my dad.
Your dad was a lawyer.
My dad is a lawyer. Yeah. Because of the exposure of movies through my friend, I thought maybe I could pursue a career in journalism. Mm. Really thinking about a journalist's point of view around arts. Around the conversation of film, maybe writing about film.
Sure.
So even with the idea of going law, I talked to stuff with my parents. Maybe I'll go to law school first, and then after law, I'll go to journalism school.
Right.
So I have this double degree that will solidify possibly a career in journalism.
No, and it makes sense, right? Because some journalists, like, you have to be knowledgeable in the law, right?
Right. So,
it kind of tied in a little bit.
So, and it was a safe route, in a sense, to pursue that, right?
Yeah.
Within my family pressure or structure. It wasn't much about as a pressure. It was just this understanding that, if you just do journalism, you might not gonna make it.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's so convoluted, this conversation around, right? Yeah. The pressure.
So true.
So when I moved here, I was not very happy with the law path. I just didn't connect with my peers. I was not inspired by being there. I was a very good student. I would do the homework, study, but it wasn't not part of this vibration that made me really be passionate about it.
Sure.
So long story short, I arrived in San Francisco in 1996, October. 5 days prior to Halloween in the United States. It was my first Halloween as well.
Yeah.
And I stayed with this family who encouraged me to on the Halloween night to go to the Castro. I have never heard of Castro before.
Oh, yeah.
I was not out. I'll talk about it in a moment.
Yeah.
So I remember walking by myself in the Castro. I have never seen any sense of not only the party, but this idea of expressing yourself through costumes in that way.
Yeah.
Right? I come from Brazil. The idea of costumes is there in Carnival, but it felt very different. And that really was a wonderful moment for me of thinking about my life in different ways.
Yeah.
There's something about staying here that I could cultivate. I didn't know exactly how and what, but I could stay in the United States longer instead of just going back to Brazil.
Right.
Because initially the idea was to come here very briefly and go back.
Right.
And things work in that way. I put myself in school, and then through school, always searching for some art making, art practice.
Yeah. Right?
And photography became the medium to study, and to practice. I was very much interested in art history.
Mm-hmm.
So the foundation for me in my practice of photography has to do with a very deep interest in learning about more about art history and photo history.
Yeah.
So I really fell in love with photo history.
Mm-hmm.
I took a photojournalism class initially first when I arrived at Cabrillo College.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first bodies of work that were very influential for me was The Americans by Robert Frank.
Oh, yeah.
Right? This Swiss photographer that comes to America, you know, the outsider looking in. But there was something really personal in that story, in that book. His last photograph in the book is a photograph that he took of his wife and his two kids at the time in 1955 on a highway in Texas. So he ends a book on that note. And I have never encountered a possibility of a photographer who is doing documentation who is also inserting his voice or her voice in the work. It's the idea of the personal.
Right.
That was extremely, extremely influential for me as a, you know, a route in my in what I was doing. It's the idea that, oh, I can start maybe potentially insert my life in the stories. I just don't need to be this photographer that's photographing the other or other. And then studying more photography and thinking about other artists that, you know, so many artists have done the same approach, inserting themselves into the work, was very, very inspiring. My coming out story has to do with my photography education, in a sense. I was learning about photographers that were dealing with sexuality. I was very interested in researching and learning more and more. And it's so marginal, the examples that we have, right? Yeah. It's you have some anchors, Robert Mapplethorpe, right? This huge figure in the conversation of sexuality within photography or in the arts. But then when you go out and try to expand, try to find women that spoke, you know, that portrayed work around it. So it's, you have very few names. And that was very interesting for me and try to do more research, start to learn more. So the process kind of really evolved. So I come from this kid who was very much mesmerized with the history of film, filmmaking, and then moving to ideas of image production, the thought behind the image, and then inserting myself within the image process, the image
background. Really using that Robert Frank, like inserting yourself into
Yes, exactly.
But the best part is that you physically, in some of your images, you physically put yourself in there. You took it to another level that I don't think he even thought about back then, right?
Yeah. Well, it was a different conversation back then, right? What even photography meant.
Yeah.
But it's interesting for me, you know, to think about this as a path, this attraction to art making or the conversation of art.
Yeah.
Even my ideas that maybe I could go to be a journalist
has
to do about writing about art making, right?
Yeah.
Writing about filmmaking or photography. It was just ideas around the attraction to self-expression.
Sure. Well, and the funny thing about photography is, like, not that the other mediums can't do it, but photography is one of those mediums that's so closely tied with all the things you just mentioned you're interested in, like history, art history, because they're the mediums that were documenting history, right? And that's when you do research, what do you come across? Photographs
exactly.
that go along with your research, right?
Yes.
That illustrate what was going on. So, yeah, that's and it's so crazy because, like, even hearing back when you were still thinking of doing law school, you're still trying to find an art connection. And you were like saying like, oh, I'll go to law school and do journalism so I can write about art. But all those things involve research, learning history. And then ultimately when you came here, you figured it out like, well, I can do all those things without having to be a lawyer. I can do it by being a photographer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's interesting. I am I'm a law school dropout in a sense, right?
That
realize a life in a career in art making because of the distaste, I would say, of the, I just this connection. I didn't connect with that world, right?
Yeah.
And I was very much trying, I was so young then, trying to figure out obviously who I was in the world and what was my community.
Right.
But it took me a long time, even as a photographer, to state or realize that I could be an artist.
Yeah.
Now, you know, photography initially was, I'm a photographer. What does it mean to be an artist that uses photography?
Right.
Right. So there's a difference there.
Yeah. I know I have this conversation with a lot of people too, where like being a photographer doesn't necessarily mean you're an artist. Like sometimes photography, you can be a photojournalist, like, which is a whole different medium to it. It could look artistic. It could be artistic.
But it's different,
but
right?
It's different. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to diminish the power of also photography itself or the role of photography. But there's just, again, the idea of understanding and learning about art history.
Right.
And inserting yourself in that history, in a sense.
Yeah.
Right. Using photography to articulate ideas. That's, I think, how I see myself now.
So then when you were done with Cabrillo College, where did you go next?
So I got a partial scholarship to come to San Francisco Art Institute.
Okay.
SFAI.
Right.
This was 2000, year 2000.
Right.
And I had friends in Santa Cruz who were extremely in support of me, you know, pursuing photography. I was photographing a lot, my community. Mm-hmm. So I had this identity as a photographer, right? I do photographs. And then the conversation of going to San Francisco to really pursue a path in an art school.
Right.
Became real, you know, was part of the conversation at the time. Should I do this? Should I not do this? What does it mean? And I did. So I went to SFAI. I studied there for 3 years. I got my BFA 2003. SFAI was very instrumental on this education about photo history that was kept enlarging for me.
Sure.
Right? I was just coming from Cabrillo College and then SFAI, just learning more and more about the history of the medium and trying things out. I moved from 35 millimeter to 4x5 to 8x10. I was just really avid and determined to learn more and more about the medium.
Right.
And the conversation of my work has always been about portraiture. So one thing we should talk about is this conversation of, even though I'm inserting myself into the work, I come from a very strong portraiture practice.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because you know, SFA is one of the schools that has, funny enough, historically has a historical photo program there. And so Adams helped start it and whatnot. But I'm curious, when you were throughout your education over there, I mean, they must have, of course, taught you other different types of formats of photography, right? Like landscape, experimental, mm-hmm. whatever. But you seem to be, you were like
very
portraiture
attracted.
Was mm-hmm. your... Was
very
your,
attracted to portraiture work, very attracted to photographers that were were talking about the personal.
Yeah.
Or ideas of intimacy within portraiture photography.
Yeah.
Just a lot of history. I studied with Linda Connor mm-hmm. and Hank Wessel. And Hank was really, really instrumental in my photography in relation to think about my communities,
mm-hmm.
Who the subjects that I was photographing and what I wanted to say about them.
Right.
And so the work was at a very documentary vein mm-hmm. initially. But again, I kept inserting myself. I kept putting, you know, my hand in front of the lens,
right.
or my feet. Something about body parts was always present. I took my first color photography class, and the my final for that was all self-portraiture. And again, not thinking I was produced self-portraiture for others it was for me. It was to activate something for me.
Sure.
It was really a statement of visibility for myself.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm here, that I'm present, that I'm, you know, I don't come from this, I come from another country.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of immigration has always been very part of the conversation of, for me and my work and where and how do I insert myself in culture, right? In communities or feeling like the other. When September 11th happened, I was in school and I became very much a walking stereotype mm-hmm. of an Arab person. The gazes that I started to receive that year, immediately after the attack, was really hard for me to understand and try to figure out what was happening.
Yeah.
And then moving, and every time that I would go to an airport, every single time, because of my name, mm-hmm. because of the way I look very Arab, I am an Arab, right? I have that part of my life as well, right?
Right.
It's like from my father, but I'm Brazilian as well. And
yeah,
so it's like, you know, and I'm an American now.
Yeah,
so it's like,
so
it's
different.
Right. There's all these identities that are part of this, you know,
like people didn't looking at you didn't understand there's nuances.
Yes.
Like you can't just mm-hmm. go by that label because mm-hmm. you don't know the life they lived and where they're from.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So one incident that happened within the week of September 11, I took Muni and it was a very crowded, and I was going to school in the morning, and it was a very crowded moment in the Muni. So I go inside, and there was a lady that she sat across from where I was, and she just stared at me. And she stared at me with so much hate.
Yeah.
And I have never experienced that in my life, that gaze. And she did not let go. She really made a point of looking to make me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. To, you know, it was violent. Mm-hmm. It was a violent gaze. Mm-hmm. That moment really affected the way that I started producing my artwork. What I was trying to then talk about in my photography, or this conversation about the othering became so important in me trying to figure out how to address that into photography. Mm-hmm. So all my ideas, I think, that started to emerge after that moment within my photo practice has to do, I was still making portrait work, but had to do of ideas of connection. Instead of looking for a gaze that is ambivalent in a sense, or confusing, or I was looking for gazes or looks in my kind of portrait making. I was looking for gazes that was about connection. How can I talk about in my photography ideas of connection by people looking at the camera to connect with the viewer?
Yeah.
So all my early series on photography has to do with a lot of conversation. My portrait work has always been very frontal, mm-hmm. facing the camera. But that gaze for me was really about connecting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the power that woman had just by a gaze, mm-hmm. right, to express what she was feeling. It goes in some, you know, it's not, it could be used not just for hate, it could be used for understanding, for love, mm-hmm. For passion, right? So yeah, that's interesting.
Power of the gaze,
yeah,
right? There's
yeah.
so much power there.
Yeah. Is it, yeah.
It's a complicated, too, conversation, yeah. right? Because what does it mean even?
Yeah.
To try to express that gaze in the work. But I think it can, I've been working so much on this for so long now that it's all possible, right? Yeah.
And photography is like the perfect medium, because that's like the medium people, you know, they say that saying that a picture's worth 1,000 words, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's no real like audio conversation coming out of a photograph, but it's like the gaze of somebody in it, the look of what it portrays, like sometimes says a lot more than, mm-hmm. having to actually say, have a conversation.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. So I'm moving forward on this path. After I finished SFAI, I started to photograph. So my photo education has to do with the intersection of digital technology, mm-hmm. with analog. 2004 is the year that in the market, they sold more digital cameras than analog cameras. So it was a flip. So I finished school. I'm ready to, you know, produce work. And then all this new digital technology is coming more and more. And at that time, there was a lot of resistance, mm-hmm. around digital technology.
Yeah.
But digital photography, right? Not digital technology, but digital photography. Digital photography is not photography. Yeah. Analog photography is what is that? You know, it was just this whole conversation and denial a lot of times what it meant to look and analyze a digital print. So I immediately felt that I should embrace this technology, and I finished school and I moved into bartending. So I was a bartender for a while, for a good four or five years of my life, and was a way to pay bills and also to provide for myself the money to buy photography,
right?
You know, tools, right?
Yeah.
And our new computer and so forth. So the idea of moving to digital or scanning film was very important. As soon as I finished SFAI, I didn't have access to darkroom.
Right.
And what I did, I bought a slide projector and I started photographing slides.
Okay.
So it was a way that I could realize not only the image, but how I saw the image, because it's light, I could just project in my room.
Right.
So I started to hold projection parties for project my work.
Right.
So it was a way to get me going with the work.
Yeah.
So I did not need to print. I didn't have money to print, right. But I had money to produce. I bought a slide. I really invested all the money I was making on slide film. I have tons of slides.
Right.
And again, photograph my community, photograph people that were close to me, the idea of kinship, ideas of friendship as well, and queerness as well at the time.
That's really smart, though. I'm thinking about it because you can later on scan slides or print off the slides.
Yes.
Right? So like it's an inexpensive way of viewing your work without having to waste money on paper and darkroom chemicals and whatever.
Exactly. And then I started, you know, inspired by Nan Golden's the slideshows that she's so well known for. Mm-hmm. I started to do my own slideshows. And then I would have parties at my house, people would come and then see the production of that year. Yeah. So this was a very instrumental moment in my career, mm-hmm. I would say, about my art production with slide film. And again, the idea of the gaze was always there. Getting the camera, getting very close to someone, trying to find ways to portray or present connections, and then showing that connection on slide form on a video projection form that is so huge, right? Because you make a projection.
Right.
So there was another way of thinking about ways of articulating ideas of connection.
Yeah.
Right? Outside of the physical print.
Yeah.
There is this slideshow.
Right. And you make it kind of more life size,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And so, you know,
even bigger.
Yeah. And add it more to the connection, mm-hmm. right? Because then when it's like right there and it's like your height,
or it's on your face.
Right.
You cannot escape.
Right. It's not just in your palm of your hand.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So there's a lot in the work with relation to technology, but also the ideas that was, you know, percolating in my head. It's interesting to look back and think about the thread.
Yeah.
There are now like this ongoing themes that were always part of the work.
Yeah. So then when is the moment that you start, like, you're on a roll, right? Where you're like, you got your equipment, you're starting, you know, you've had this revelation now. When is kind of like the turning point then where like things started happening, where like you're showing your work, you know, you're starting to like feel like you hit what you want to like show in your work?
After 2 years of being out of SFAI, I tried different approaches in photography or different communities. I was an intern for a commercial photographer in the Bay Area. And I realized that that was not the conversation I wanted to have in my work. It's not the kind of work I wanted to produce.
Mm-hmm.
It was very important for me. It really was. Yeah. As a career choice, I don't want to pursue this route.
Sometimes you have to do something to know that that's not what you want
exactly,
to do.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And that really led me to really think about more of what is it that I wanted to do with photography, my photography, mm-hmm. right? How am I going to realize myself as a photographer, or if I don't want to do commercial photography?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And as I mentioned, I was a bartender, and I would work in the day or at night, but come home and then start thinking more and more about the kind of production that I was, art making that I was producing. And then the moment started to be this interest of maybe it's time to study more.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's time to go back to school. And the ideas of going back to school to study led me to really, produce more work. Not only for school applications, but for myself. Right. If I'm going to pursue this, I got to produce work.
Right.
And it was a very instrumental moment. However, in 2005, something very dramatic happened in my life. Someone broke into my house and stole my computer and my equipment. Oh. I got home from a long day of work, and I got to the house and everything was open. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And so that year, I had just bought a new computer. It was the first, you know, desktop that it's kind of at that time. It was just, I felt that the work was manifesting and I was producing a lot. And then I lost everything, like lost. I didn't have backed up anything. Right. Backed up. One thing that I teach now, and rule number one of the game, you know, back up your work, right? Especially in digital, it's like you have to back up.
Yeah.
And so I learned through the very, very hard way. And that was a setback. But I don't know, it made it to be an opportunity to restart fresh and be a lot more conscientious and more aware of what kind of images I was gonna make to restart.
Yeah.
Right. So I had to. I was depressed for a little while. Really trying to wrestling of the idea of what had just happened. No, how is this possible? How did I lose so much work? To then shift the conversation to how am I gonna produce now? What am I gonna produce? What am I gonna work? And that determination really was instrumental on the path of then I'm gonna go back to school. I'm gonna continue to produce work. I'm just and ideas of portraying, making portraiture. Mm-hmm. And so that's has to do.
So where did you end up going to school for?
So I so it's a long story because I applied several times, but I ended up going for my MFA at Stanford.
Oh, wow.
For art practice. Which was another conversation because Stanford is a small Stanford offers a small graduate program for art practice for art makers.
Yeah.
And it's not only photography. You in the conversation. So not only is a small program, but is which is really wonderful, but it is centered on art practice in general. So it was just not studying photography. Oh, my peers were artists in other fields, yeah. Other disciplines.
Right.
And it was really wonderful for me to be in that environment.
Yeah.
And so that conversation as well, this path of becoming an artist, really this being at Stanford was very instrumental on the conversation, the understanding of what I was doing as a photographer had a contribution in art making, in art history even. Right.
So
that's the...
Right.
But prior to Stanford, I received an opportunity to go to the residency in Paris for 6 months at a place called Cité Internationale des Arts. It's a wonderful venue to in Paris. You can meet a lot of different artists from all over the world. And that was a wonderful, wonderful educational opportunity for me. Because I pursued the residency as a school. It was just not there to produce work, but I was there to learn.
Yeah.
And not only I was in Paris, but allowed me to travel and go visit art museums. It was all about visiting museums or about going to galleries, about to learn as much as I could.
Yeah. Continuing your research.
Exactly, right? Yeah. The production of its time.
Right.
And being very disappointed on the conversation of racial identity, of sexuality, you know, like the kind of work that is... that has emphasis or people give emphasis, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the times I didn't feel connected. So all this kind of became more central in my conversation. If as I'm going back to Stanford, I go back to school and I'll start Stanford. I wanted to study conversational gender study, sexuality, racial intersectionality, these ideas that were, they're very much part of my work.
Now, things that, and it's crazy that it took, well, I mean, how influential that trip was to see that that conversation wasn't being had ever, rarely, and that history.
Yeah, you get very, you know, it's there, but it's so marginal, right? Like the what you see out there is very much centered on a, you know, the cis white male perspective,
right?
You know, to this day,
right. Especially in a place like Europe, where that's supposed to be seen as like the epicenter, right? Yes.
So it's problematic, right? What people give the priority or the attention, right? It's very male oriented in a specific route. It's not, you know. Yeah. So that was very important for me to think about, right? And when you go to these museums, they're, you know, one of the best museums in the world. The lack of women representation, right? It's incredible. It's just, you know, like, so the awareness for me of that was very much by experience, by going to the museums and start paying attention to that. So it was a very hyper awareness of, in every time I would go, to a new festival, a new gallery, a new, you know, something was happening. It's, oh, wow. What is it that people really want, are giving priority again to show? And what happened to the other stories, right?
So then how did that visually start playing out in your work after that? Like,
so I, around this time, I met the person who became my husband, mm-hmm. right? My partner, who is a visual artist himself. His name is Darren Martin, and he teaches at UC Davis. He's a professor at UC Davis. He teaches animation and video. And by meeting him, my work start to become very personal on portraying him, portraying our relationship, but maybe making a portrait of him. The camera was always there for me. So within our, from the start of our relationship, and he understood as well, because he's an artist himself, the my intentions of photographing him.
Right.
So my work starts to become very personal on again, portraiture, right? But very about my life with him. Mm-hmm. And really thinking about ideas of presentation of two men together. And this idea of queerness, right? If you want to call it that way. The conversation of the work, the themes of the work is about the lives of two men kissing, two men touching, two men having sex, everything about the relationship about man-to-man love. And so the work starts to solidify very much in that sense. And besides that, I start to think about the history of muses, right? Again, because of my experience in European museums, you see so many photographers photographing their muses, right? The women muses. And, right. You know, they're using this.
Edward Weston, like, seems to be the first one that comes
right?
to mind.
Right, or Harry Callahan.
Oh, right.
Right,
yeah,
which
yeah.
produced an amazing body of work yeah. on his wife, Eleanor. Right.
right.
Or his daughter, Barbara,
yeah.
you know, when she was a child. It's a body of work that I really love, right? It was a fantastic, superb sensibility mm-hmm. expressing the work, right? Very well executed. I just loved it. It was very touching to me. But again, made me question of what happens when, where's man to man? What is the muse when it's a man, mm-hmm. right? So then I start to think even more about my work with Darren as, well, Darren is my muse, right? As a man. And
right.
I'm a man photographing.
Right.
But I didn't want to objectify him. I didn't want to create a work about the sexualization of this man.
Right.
So I wanted to be work about intimacy, about that goes beyond about objectification.
Mm-hmm.
There's about a connection, again, a conversation of connection. Right.
right.
And then when you think about a lot of story around the history of homosexuality in art making or portraiture or photography, a lot has to do with sexualization of the body.
Right.
Right? Like, even Robert Mapplethorpe, you know, the work, but his work is so complex, there's so many layers, right?
Yeah.
But there's also that, the objectification of the black male body. That's very much present in his work.
Right.
There's a lot of discussions around that. And for me, it was, I didn't want to do that kind of work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do about work, again, that has to do, psychologically speaking, it was about an interaction, about love between two guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that work led me to produce other series around photographing mostly men too, looking at the camera. I did a series called Seeders. This idea of sitting for the camera, thinking about old practice of, or just the beginning of practice of portrait photography, is that you had to sit down for the camera. You
right.
cannot move because of long exposure.
right.
So you had to be really present.
Yeah.
Right. With the photographer and with the camera towards the lens. So this series was very much around that conversation of stopping everything and just be calm, you know, and just look and connect it to the camera, therefore to the viewer. So my whole, there was an entire series on that. And then from that, I had this idea of asking people to create a personal character based on mythological ideas, superheroes. I come from a history of passion for comic books.
Yeah.
And so does Darren. So we have that connection. We always talk so much about comic books and, you know, superheroes and outside of what we understand of as Marvel and DC in movies
right.
now, right?
Right,
it's,
right.
It's times so banal now,
right,
the presentation, right.
right?
There was something so interesting on the writing of those
right.
comic books.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. I never grew up reading comic books. I knew of them. And then the Marvel movies came out. But I'm also the type of person where if I find out a movie is going to be based on a book or something that's already created beforehand, I like to go back and read the book or the comic.
Yes, yeah.
So the last like few years, I have a public library like ebook account.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out all these old comic books. And I started reading them. And I found them so interesting because they do talk about social. The writing was really good. Like, you know, even 70s and 80s, 90s, they're writing about social issues.
Their ideas of queerness, there are ideas of immigration.
Yeah.
Their ideas of drug abuse.
Yep.
It's just, it's there's so much in there, yeah, to unpack. And for me, it was very instrumental on my formative years.
Right.
Right. On reading comic books and have identification of specific characters,
yeah,
that were outsiders.
Right.
That were mutants because they were, you know.
They were different. Ideas of, yeah, different.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So that was, it's something very profound for me,
yeah,
on that level. And so the series that later became, you know, that became known as Guardians of the Golden Gate.
Oh, nice.
It was a series that I did from 2012, 2013, mm-hmm, asking people to realize a character for the camera.
Wow.
So my approach was going after people that at the time, my friends, people that I knew, and ask them to think about a character and think about a costume. That then we would find a location, we would scout a location around San Francisco, mm-hmm, and then photograph that person in that location as very much presenting the ideas of a superhero,
mm-hmm,
right? Or mythological figures as well, depending how people connect it. Some people don't connect with superheroes' ideas, right? But connect, right, with mythology or this idea of cultural references.
Yeah.
So that was a very wonderful body of work on my journey that led me to a lot of ideas of identity and, again, self-expression and self-awareness to the camera.
Yeah.
Right? Because you are creating this staged setting for the camera, therefore for the viewer.
Yeah.
Right? And I also inserted myself in that body of work. So there's a picture of me as well thinking,
right,
about that. So it's like me again, part of the work is just about the other people. It's about me and inserting myself in a community of friends and photographing.
Right.
It's in a very fun and interesting that I thought way of doing it.
Sure.
I also am part of a large group of friends, of a very solid community of friends, a lot of queer identified individuals. And I would invite, we would meet and to set up something for the camera.
Yeah.
And then every time there is Gay Pride Parade or the event of a Gay Pride or the event of Folsom Street Fair, Dory Alley, we would go to a friend's house and set up an entire studio, photo studio production in a sense.
Yeah.
With a camera facing a backdrop. And then we all go inside, you know, in the back to take photograph of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, in costumes, in leather or... So again, I am also activating this conversation of representation.
Right.
That feels very much centered on queerness and,
sure,
and celebrating.
Yeah.
That, right. But through these costumes. So the costumes that the conversation of costumes within Guardians of the Golden Gate, mm-hmm, and then these other images that I was producing, then finally led me to a production of really thinking about garments, really thinking about the costume or the clothing as very essential cultural points in the photograph.
Sure.
That you can connect depending what you understand about that.
Right.
Right. The clothing. So the work starts to evolve in that way.
Yeah. Well, and it's another way to get to know the subject too, right? Because isn't like the way we dress or like what we like to dress kind of expresses how we are too, or how we think. Or
exactly.
Or
and how people get creative,
yeah,
on their own way to produce or to create a character, or to,
sure,
you know, or to put things together. And I also learned so much on that. Like, oh, you're mixing this with that. Oh,
yeah,
I'm going to do the same. Or, you know, kind of, it's interesting.
Right.
So I get very inspired by that as well.
So, yeah. So, and I mean, that leads to present day, really. Like your work, I mean, it's what the type of work that you're doing right now, and you've done it for Ben 8, for Bay Area Now 8 over at YBCA. You did it for a show that over at Southern Exposure, which was called The Tallest Part of the Arch. And one of the things that stood out to me about each of those photographs was how, you know, we live in a world where diversity exists as like, oh, having a black person, an Asian person, or a brown person, like in a community, right? But the cool part was is that you took LGBTQ and you even showed how diverse that community was in itself, I felt like, through these images.
So the this idea of categorization is so problematic, right?
Right.
Is, oh, you're part of that group. Part
right.
Of that. There's so many groups within that group, within that group, within
right.
that group.
It just goes what on forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's how to articulate ideas on that. Right. Right. And this conversation of intersectionality, what does it even mean? The forces against a marginal group.
Sure.
Right. Based on race, based on sexuality, based on gender. So the work is very much central on ideas of visibility
sure.
around that.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to this project, the youth project, I was really thinking about my work as activating an idea about intersectionality of a Middle Eastern and queer identity. When the war in Syria started and was all over the news in 2014, mm-hmm. I met with some gay Syrian refugees. Or in the Bay Area. And I felt a very deep desire to talk about that, right? Some of them really had to fled their families, mm-hmm. right? In the midst of the whole war, and then not only you're dealing with war, but dealing with ideas of identity based on your sexuality, mm-hmm. right? So it's so problematic.
Yeah.
And the idea was to try to address some of this conversation within my photography. Nobody wanted to be part of it. Nobody that I met felt comfortable to be visible in front of the camera to articulate ideas.
Yeah.
And with a strong fear of violence or just honor around their parents or family members. So that led me to then activate the conversation by myself. And I have a privilege as well because I live in the United States. You know, I grew up in Brazil. I have this identification with the Syrian culture or Middle Eastern Arab culture, mm-hmm. right? Because Middle East is so big, right? What does that even mean? But this idea of being an Arab or look like an Arab or have a name that's Arabic,
mm-hmm.
right? My name is, my first name is the word beautiful. So there's something about celebrating this Arab identity through my name. So I started to use myself into the work to activate a discussion about these intersections of culture and sexuality. And that led me then to invite other people to come to the studio and try to activate through their stories ideas around how, depending on the culture that you were born, how does affect how you think or your parents thought or even think about sexuality or about gender, right? What is a woman's role in the family based on culture, tradition,
right?
So everybody has a different perspective around that, depending on how they grew up or where they grew up or what kind of cultural reference they had. So that was the entry point to articulate his ideas in the Hughes project. And then in Hughes, it's about the fluidity. It's about this, you know, extrapolating from the gay flag with all, you know, this label or this flag that is so symbolic of a cultural identity, mm-hmm. right? And then think about within those colors, there's a lot of fluidity. There's mm-hmm. a lot of nuances there. That's mm-hmm. how the word or the project, the idea of hues came about.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I use color. I'm really thinking about color as a celebration.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I also love about your photographs is that you really utilize the vibrancies of like the colors and the backgrounds of your
Because color moves us and affects
really
us in so many ways.
It does,
right?
Yeah.
So from the start, I didn't want to do a green screen. Mm. It just didn't feel natural.
Yeah.
There's something about being immersed in a sense, really within that color, that there's something that we've, you know, psychologically and physically even respond. So all the hues, everything that you see in the backdrop, it's like we are in that color palette. We are really thinking about how to portray ourselves through color, but through the costume, through outfits that we wear.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the current show you have
over
at SF Camera Work.
Yes.
And it's going through March 14th, right?
Yes.
So tell me about that show, because I haven't yet visited, mm-hmm. but I did read up on it, and I saw that there is not just photographs, you also have video installations,
exactly.
right, into the piece. So tell me about that show.
So that show came about through a grant proposal that I did through San Francisco Arts Commission. They provide a grant every 2 years for individual artists in specific disciplines.
Yeah.
Right? And my approach was photography and video in a sense. So I approached SF Camera Work with the idea of realizing an exhibition on the Hughes project. By talking to them, specifically with Heather Snyder, who is a director there, Heather, we did a student visit, and Heather mentioned on the possibility that they were more interested in showcase a survey in exhibition that led the journey of where I am at now. So instead of just concentrating on a specific project such as Hughes, how about back pedal a little bit, right? Like go back and start thinking about what is the kind of work that informed the Hughes? How did you get to Hughes? What is the thought behind the work that led me to produce this work now? Mm-hmm. So at first I was, how am I going to do this? You know, I don't want to, I was concerned of the show being schizophrenic, right? Because I did I activated a lot of conversation
right.
in different ways, using video at times or video animation. I really like the idea of video animation. Mm-hmm. But it's all centered on ideas of identity. You know, it's all centered of articulating ideas of queerness, of being part of a community or a subculture of a culture. So it's like, so that's how we lay out the show. So, and then the title of the show is Together, right? And together is this double meaning. It's the works are together, mm-hmm. but also the photographs, the people in the photograph, them, you know, they're part of the work. We are together in the work. So you're there's right. the conversation as well.
Right? Yeah. How was it? I mean, I'm assuming that's not your first time using video installation work.
No. Right? So in 2014, I did a residency, a Recology. I don't know if you know Recology. Recology is a private company in San Francisco that provides an art and residency program.
Yeah.
And they choose 6 artists per year.
Right.
And they give us studio space, a stipend. I'm part of the board now of the program. I love it. It's a program.
And Recology is the same company as like that picks up your trash. Right?
Exactly. Right. So not only they pick up your trash, pick up what's recyclable, but you can drive there and in a sense donate or dispose what is not trash, what could be recycle.
Nice.
So it's about recycling.
Right.
And the way that the program is designed is for you to think about the production and consumption of commodities, right? And how things can be recycled. Anything can be recycled, right? This microphone on the brakes, well, there are parts of the microphone that could be fixed.
Right.
You know, it could be recycled for other microphones, for other things, right? Or for art production even.
Yeah.
So that was a very instrumental moment for me and think about my practice in ways that outside of photography, there could be articulated ideas in movement.
Yeah.
And then I start to put images together within maybe even the same photo shoot, but transforming this very quick GIF animation.
Yeah.
And that led me to an entire different route, in a sense, of self-expression. Not only think about this still image, but this ideas of the video, right? Because a GIF essentially becomes a video when you're in a present, right? It's a video. So that's the video. Then I start to think about installation and how to then realize a video that you don't just sit down in front of the monitor. How can I make it to be something more exciting, right? And so that's sort of the production. And within that led me to the conversation of lenticular prints, which I also, I have 2 large lenticular prints in the show SF Camera Work now. And lenticular are images that are mixed together. And there's a flip when you, depending how you see the side that you see the print.
Oh, that's cool.
You see one image, then you move, you see the other image. So it's a very interesting technology that's been used since 1960s.
Sure.
A lot of times within religious iconography. I remember my grandma had this a picture of Jesus, and then it was a small lenticular print that we just, you know, you can flip.
It was like a hologram. Yeah,
exactly.
I know exactly what you're
talking about. Jesus
is
crying. Jesus is not crying. Jesus is crying. So you're just like, oh my God, right? So I'm making Jesus cry by moving this thing, right? So it's, again, idea of intersections, mm-hmm. right, of images. So that there's something very interesting for me on that conversation.
Sure.
They can realize a narrative that is not fixed, but it moves. And depending on the angle that you see in the lenticular,
sure,
these two images are you get part of both of them.
Sure.
So just no one versus the other.
Right.
It's truly mixed. Yeah. So it becomes a perfect metaphor,
yeah,
for a lot of the ideas I'm trying to put, you know, to, sure, put forward in the work.
Well, I mean, and again, like, you know, like this idea of connecting, you know, you make it a little bit animated, you make it come alive, you have, that's another step towards connecting.
Exactly, right? And,
similar to how you were projecting years before.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, it's a great point, yeah, yes, right? Ideas of people, then people to connect,
right?
Right,
right.
And force them to move as well.
Right.
So it's an interesting conversation around that,
yeah,
right?
Because
it's all about this idea of connecting. It's the idea of visibility, mm-hmm, right? And not victimization. No one is a victim, you know, like this idea of the other. It's just, no, we all present in the same moment, in a, yeah, sense. And there's a conversation back and forth.
You know, what's next after SF Camera Works?
So, good question. Going, yeah. Next is, I want to realize Hugh's project into a book form.
Oh, wow.
So that's my goal.
Yeah, that'd
and
be cool.
Yes, it would be really wonderful. I have a lot of writing. I interview a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, we talk a lot. It's just an interview. I write. I have a lot of writing that's part of the work.
Yeah.
And so my goal for this year is to really finish this project and then navigate to the entire conversation of book publishing. And I want to find a writer. I want to work with a writer that can come with a fresh perspective, in a sense, and something that I can articulate through writing that, yeah, someone can,
right,
write about the work.
Because,
right, the work is not just about queerness or racial identity or gender identity. There's so much that can be tied together within a very strong writing.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my goal, is to have a writer to work with and collaborate with me to fully realize this book. So, yeah, I feel like I need to... I need to hide a little bit, in a sense, from, you know, exhibitions or, you know, external things, and just really concentrating on finishing this project.
Sure.
I have other ideas as far as how to be in the studio, what to trigger for conversation.
Yeah.
But that's the main goal. And maybe we can finish on a note as far as ideas that are percolating in my head.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about queerness as this constant force that has always been part of history, right? And in, right, a sense, it's immortal. There's an immortality to it.
Absolutely.
And I then started thinking about the vampire metaphor.
Yeah.
Right? As this entity that becomes immortal, it continues.
Right.
And when you think about the history of vampires, has always been connected to this idea of seduction or something sexy, right? There's something that on the writings about vampires, there's something, right, that can be obviously very violent,
sure,
right? And kill people, but there's also this idea of the neck,
right?
Right? The how sensual,
sure,
or how sexy a neck is. So we start from there. There's a sexualization around, right, the conversation.
Well, the thing too about vampires is that in almost every story is that the appeal of immortality.
Yes.
Right?
So, yes. Right?
That, like, people sometimes, like, despite how monstrous they can be, they still love the idea of the vampire because they live through time.
Through time,
and
exactly,
through different cultures. And they like learn to embed themselves in all these different cultures.
So one of the sort of my latest piece at SF Camera Works has to do with these ideas. These,
yeah,
ideas of the gays are going to live forever.
Yeah.
Right? It's part of the conversation.
Right.
So I'm this is where I am right now. I'm on very much on the idea of moving through time as in thinking about queerness as this energy that will not stop.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
This
is great. This is great. I loved hearing you talk about your work and
thank you so much. This is wonderful to think about this journey.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, no problem. All right.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Jamil for coming onto the podcast. His solo show Together runs through March 14th at SF Camera Work here in San Francisco. Check out the podcast website to see images of Jamil and his work. Also, please be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at ArtScenePC. Till next time, everyone.